and thank you so much for joining us for Market Sense. I'm Heather Hedges with Fidelity. It is Tuesday, March 5th. The official start of spring is exactly 2 weeks from today already, believe it or not. And of course, February is behind us, and it was a winning month for stocks. So the Dow and S&P 500 both posted gains, and the tech-heavy NASDAQ soared to record highs. And all of this, despite continued inflation and renewed budget wrangling in Washington as well. So to talk about all of that and what it means for investors, we are joined, as we often are, by Urian Timmer, Fidelity's Director of Global Macro. Plus, today is traditionally one of the most important dates on the U.S. political calendar. It is Super Tuesday, the day in the presidential primary cycle when voters in 15 states and one territory head to the polls. So to give us the inside the Beltway scoop, we are so fortunate today to be joined by Fidelity's Vice President of Federal Government Relations, who is calling in from our nation's capital today, Alice Joe. And also logging on from the Windy City today, we've got Randall Lenore, a Chicago-based branch leader here at Fidelity. And she's going to be sharing with us some of our customers' most commonly asked questions when it comes to the election. So a big group today and a big hello to all of you. Thank you for joining us.
It is always great to be back with this group.
And I'm happy to be with you too.
Great to see you. Should be a great show.
I think we've got the A-team today, guys. And before we begin, just a reminder to submit your questions to our panelists in the comments section if you're watching us on YouTube or LinkedIn, or if you're watching on the Fidelity website, you can also leave a question on our Market Sense page or take our feedback poll there on our Market Sense page. And I want to jump right in because we've got so much to talk about. Before we dive into politics, though, Urian, let's get caught up on the market news. So this month, we will have our first Fed meeting, Urian, where we could potentially see the Fed make a cut, although it is not looking like the most likely of scenarios, but that potential is there. It does seem, though, having said that recently, that the market seems to be a little bit less focused lately on what the Fed might do and when it might cut. So first of all, do you agree with that? Why is that? Is it justified? And I guess, you know, the bigger question here is, has the economy taken off so much that it doesn't really matter at this point if the Fed cuts?
Yeah, so all very good questions. And just a few months ago, you know, the market would be obsessed about, you know, okay, is the Fed finally done raising rates? How soon is it going to cut rates? By how much? And the market had priced in 6 rate cuts just for this year, starting in March, which of course is now. And the Fed correctly sort of, you know, backpedaled that a little bit, saying, okay, you know, we're making progress on inflation, that what we call the core PCE, which is one of the inflation metrics that the Fed watches closely, is down to 2.8% year over year, which is certainly a lot better than the 5.6% that it was 2 years ago. We should be getting the CPI data fairly soon as well.
But it's the core PCE that the Fed cares more about than the CPI,
yes,
right?
That's the Fed's key measure. And 2.8, you know, is better than 5.6, is not as good as the Fed's target, but it's moving in the right direction. So it makes sense that the Fed will give back some of the rate hikes that it instituted, you know, over the last few years, because when you think about Fed policy, it's relative to the inflation rate, right? This is called what we call real rate. So if inflation comes down and the Fed does not come down with it, it actually is getting more restrictive. And you know, we're at a phase in the cycle where that's no longer appropriate. So the Fed should follow inflation down to some degree, but I think the Fed is correct in not going too soon, because it's harder to undo that than to just wait a little bit longer. But, you know, you made a good observation, which is that the market isn't really as focused anymore on rate cuts as much as it was, you know, a year ago. And the reason for that is that earnings are coming through. You know, we just finished fourth quarter earnings season. The growth rate for fourth quarter earnings year over year is now 8%. So that's a healthy increase. And what we know from markets is that when earnings are growing, the market needs less help from the interest rate side. It doesn't mean that interest rates don't matter. They do. But when earnings are not growing, the market is very vulnerable to changes in interest rates. But when you have that pillar of earnings to underpin the markets, the market can sort of, you know, be a little bit more relaxed about it. So I think the expectations are the Fed will cut, but not in March, and certainly not, at least in my opinion, by as many cuts as the market is expecting. But the market doesn't need it at this point.
Okay. Well, yeah, it's fascinating to me how the market's obsession with what the Fed might do seems to have calmed down a little bit. All right, Urien, thanks for explaining why. So as I mentioned today, we're fortunate to be joined today by our Federal Government Relations Vice President, Alice Zhou. And I can't think of a better source when it comes to what's happening in Washington at this very moment. So Alice, I'm so excited to talk to you today. And before we talk about the election, I'd like to first ask you about perhaps the biggest story in D.C. right now from the past week, which is the push to try to avoid a government shutdown. So there was a deal reached last week, but some government agencies still face a potential shutdown later this month. Kind of get us up to speed on where we stand so we're not out of the woods just yet. And what do you think is the likely outcome here?
Yeah, absolutely, Heather. Just last Thursday, we saw Congress vote to extend the funding deadlines to March 8th for 6 out of the 12 federal government spending bills that are out there. And then also they put March 22nd deadline for the second set of 6 bills there. Now, you're right. Over the weekend, we saw a deal come together for the first tranche, those first 6 bills. And they're actually going to be voted on tomorrow in the House and then on Thursday in the Senate. Because the package itself is not controversial, I think, you know, it's going to get passed on a bipartisan basis there. Now, the second tranche that's expiring on March 22nd is where we may face some headwinds because it includes bills for the Homeland Security Department as well as for the Health and Human Services Department, both of which have some somewhat politically charged issues there. So it's going to be interesting to see how House Speaker Mike Johnson approaches this because he's faced with some hardline conservatives who represent a really minority faction of his party. These members, because there's only a 2-seat majority of Republicans in the House, they do have a lot of sway there. So the Speaker is going to be faced with some really tough choices here. He's either going to have to pass the spending bills at the negotiated spending levels with some partisan riders attached to them and risk shutting down the government, or he could pass the spending levels at the negotiated spending levels without the riders, but also risk his speakership there. So we're not likely to see a shutdown this week because the package this week is non-controversial, but we're not exactly out of the woods, as you said, for later in the month. So stay tuned for that.
Okay, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how Speaker Johnson handles all of this, especially given what happened last time. Urien, any thoughts, anything that investors should be aware about when it comes to potential economic or market impact of a potential government shutdown?
You know, we've had, of course, government shutdowns in the past, and they generally are not market moving events because the markets, I think, are detached enough from the drama in Washington to conclude that, you know, sooner or later, these shutdowns will be resolved. And in a way, it's kind of like the debt ceiling stuff that we've talked about in the past that you know, pops up every once in a while. Markets generally don't get too concerned because there really is no choice but to raise the debt ceiling. I mean, it sounds terrible, but so the markets generally are somewhat dispassionate about these things because they conclude that they're temporary.
Okay, dispassionate. And Randell, let's give you a chance to talk here. Thanks for your patience. What should we all keep in mind as we watch this play out?
So what me and my team tend to tell people that we're talking to right now is to not be distracted by whatever's going on in Washington, at least when it's related to your investing and in saving for retirement and big things like that. So we tell our customers the best course of action is a diversified, disciplined approach that is unemotional. So be careful not to invest based on your feelings related to the political climate that's going on right now. Now, feelings are important for a lot of things. Hopefully they drive you to do a lot of things that you feel are important related to these issues, but they should not drive your investment decisions because it's not facts. Earnings and other fundamentals, just like what Urien just said, are what drive the markets and they've been positive. So keep your eyes on the prize. Focus on your goals and your investment plans to get you where you're trying to go. And I understand that it's easy for us to say, don't be an emotional investor. So I'll just mention, if you find yourself in a place where you're struggling to tune out the headlines, to stay focused, to kind of sort through the static, sometimes coaching and guidance can clear the fog and a financial professional or financial planner can often help in that way. So that's something to consider.
I like that you said, you know, it's easy for us to say don't be emotional, but you recognize that can be harder than to actually do that than to say it. So thank you for that candor, Randell. Let's move on to our other topic of today, and that's the presidential election and it being Super Tuesday, as I had mentioned earlier. Alice, first of all, let's talk about why this presidential election matters in the domestic and the global landscape.
Yeah, absolutely, Heather. So, you know, whoever's elected president of the United States, he is going to be setting U.S. policy and has the authority to act unilaterally, both through executive orders and or regulations through his administration. If you look at what's happening on the global scale, you know, the U.S. has been fairly involved in providing aid to the war in Ukraine, as well as to the Israel and Hamas war. So the question is, will that continue with the next president, or what role will we take in providing leadership globally? We're also seeing some heightened tensions between the U.S. and China. And as you know, those are the two largest economies in the world. So how we deal with them from a trade policy perspective and other issues is going to absolutely have an impact on us on a domestic level. But looking here at the home front, I mean, we're looking at some fiscal challenges here. U.S. national debt, you know, today tops $34 trillion and is growing rapidly. And we're constantly having these government shutdown, federal government spending debates here. But the one thing, Heather, that we're not really hearing debate on is entitlement reform, which really takes up nearly two-thirds of annual federal government spending. We've got an entitlements cliff facing us with Social Security set to deplete funds in 2034. And after that point, you know, Social Security recipients will likely only get 77% of their full benefit. And of course, you know, here the economy with mortgage rates, they have been going up. They're about 160% higher since January of 2021. That's the highest we've seen it in two decades. And you know, you all just talked about the Fed and the interest rates trying to get inflation under control, which has affected everything from rent to gas to groceries. And I know that's something that you all talk about here on Market Sense.
Yes, it certainly is. Yeah, often. Yeah, all of those issues certainly on the minds of our viewers and our podcast listeners and voters. And we have been getting a lot of webcast and podcast viewer and listener questions about the election and what it means for their bottom line, what it means for our customers' money and our listeners' money. And so I was hoping, Alice, you could kind of lay out some of the possible scenarios that we could see in November and what that could mean for getting business done in Washington moving forward.
Yeah, so it is Super Tuesday, and historically, it's a really big day for presidential primaries. But, you know, what it's really looking like is we're going to end up with a Biden versus Trump rematch in November. But both candidates, you know, have their own challenges, right? So former President Trump is facing continued legal issues. President Biden is facing approval ratings that historically really low levels there. And in fact, you know, earlier this year, we saw a Reuters poll come out that said that 67% of respondents said that they preferred a candidate other than Biden and Trump. But, you know, just as important as the presidential race here are the congressional races, where control for the House and Senate are up for grabs. Right now, the Senate is controlled by Democrats. And they're going to have an uphill battle in November, because if you look at the 34 seats that are up this cycle, Democrats are defending 23 of those, which in half a dozen of those seats are swing states. So Republicans really only need to pick up 1 to 2 seats to gain the majority, because right now the margin is 51-49 in the Senate. Now, in the House, it looks to be a little bit more even, with House Republicans controlling the House 219 to 213. But the current lack of legislative progress in Congress right now, coupled with a lot of redistricting that we're seeing in various states, could give the edge to Democrats. So they may have a little bit of an upper hand in the House, where they would only need to pick up a net of 3 seats.
Okay. Well, so as usual, there's a lot riding on congressional control, it sounds like. What are some of the policies that could change depending on who wins, Alice?
Yeah, well, it depends on the election scenario outcome. So one, we can easily see both chambers flip and end up with another divided Congress. So if that's the case, we're going to see a lot of the same that we're getting today, you know, which is legislative gridlock and more spending fights. So I think the real impact is determining who's going to win the White House, right? So if President Biden wins a second term, we might see him, you know, pull back from some of the more progressive stances that he's taken during his first term. We're also going to see some turnover in his cabinet agencies, which is typical for a second term of an administration, which means that, you know, we're likely to see a more moderated agenda there as well. Now, under President Trump, we're likely to see reversals of very politically charged regulations that have been implemented this term. And then we'd also see a pullback in terms of onerous type regulations as well. Now, the other election outcome that could happen is what I call a trifecta. And that's when one party wins the White House, the House, and the Senate. So if this happens, Republicans or Democrats, if they achieve a trifecta, I would expect a partisan agenda to be pushed through over the next 4 years. Now, one area I'll say that we're absolutely watching for is taxes, because as we all know, individual provisions within the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017 is set to expire in 2025. So that's next year. And this is going to have an impact on everything from marginal tax rates to the standard deduction to 199A business deductions, as well as charitable contributions and estate and gift tax exemptions as well. Now, any extensions of these provisions are going to need to be paid for. So there's going to be a couple of areas where I'd watch in order to pay for any extensions there. So one is Rothification under Republican control, as well as limiting some of the tax efficiency of certain products and services. They're going to look for tax revenue from anything from donor advised funds, as well as implementing some work requirements potentially for social welfare programs. Now, if we're under Democratic control, you know, we could expect to see proposals to increase the corporate and individual tax rates, especially those in the upper tax bracket. Last time they tried to eliminate the backdoor Roth, so that certainly could come back up, as well as putting limits on larger retirement accounts, including what they consider mega IRAs, and also limiting some of the deductibility for higher income individuals.
Okay, that answers some of the questions that we've gotten from our viewers and podcast listeners. Thanks for that, Alice. Randell, how about you? What are some of the questions that you and your team are getting about the election from your clients? What are they asking?
Oh, a lot of what Alice just said. Honestly, customers are wondering about geopolitics, and others are concerned about the market being choppy. And some people even wondering, hey, should I sell everything and wait until after the election? You know, those are the types of things coming up. People are worried that the economy isn't strong, that things are getting more expensive. They're worried about whoever is going to be in the office will impact that. Even some concerns about losing their jobs. So, you know, what's going on in the job market. So essentially, we're getting a lot of concern, and we're doing a lot of reassuring with our clients right now. So first, the market doesn't typically care, like I said, about which party wins, or doesn't tend to care about who runs Congress or whether it's split. Just like Urian said, what's the word? Dispassionate.
Dispassionate
about it. But policy does shift things. It can shift things. But like Alice was just saying, think about how long it takes for policy change to happen over a span of several elections. Sometimes, like we were just talking about political gridlock, and that's something that people complain about quite often. And that's so tempting to place your bets on. But that's usually why these impacts are neutral for our clients when it looks at the long term. So political headlines in the short term can cause ripples, but I don't want anyone to be distracted over the long term. Stocks and bonds and other investments, the returns tend to be driven, again, by the fundamentals of the underlying asset classes in your portfolio. So that's why we recommend looking at things like, for example, interest rate levels. And those can facilitate or restrict economic growth. They can impact the job market. It can be a good indicator of strength for the consumer, for business activities, inventory levels. So those are things that investors should be paying attention to.
All right. And you mentioned returns, Urian. Let's bring you back in here. So can you give us a historical perspective here? Because I know that this is something that you do routinely pay attention to during election seasons, of course. what impact have presidential elections had on market returns, if at all?
Yes, so I'll echo what Randall just said. And if you look at this chart here, you'll see two sides, the left hand and the right hand. And the left hand side shows the 2-year return following a presidential election. And the right hand side shows the 4-year return. These are annualized returns. And this is based on various different outcomes, right? The one party sweeping all houses, trifecta, as Alice was saying, or some sort of gridlock, et cetera. And I'm not going to go into each of the different episodes here, but you will see that the 2-year number is all over the place and the 4-year number is very, very consistent. And of course, part of that story is that after 2 years after the presidential election, you get the midterm election. And oftentimes the midterm election will course correct, let's say, a more extreme outcome in the presidential election. So that's a very good sort of moderator. But what you see is over the 4 years after a presidential election, the returns are about 8-9% price return, so add a couple of percent for dividends, almost no matter what happens. And that's to Randall's point that over the long term, this is a $28 trillion economy, a $40 trillion stock market, and it's going to do what it's going to do.
All right. It's going to do what it's going to do. We're up against the clock, Yuri, and so let's get right to Timur's take. What else are you watching?
CPI and the employment numbers are coming out this week. And again, it's another good check to see whether the economy really has soft landed or not. And so far, the evidence continues to point to yes.
Okay. Well, a huge thank you to all three of my guests today for this very comprehensive discussion. I think we hit this from all angles, so I really appreciated each one of you making the time today. And this is the time of the show now to get those camera phones out, because there's a QR code on your screen right now, and that's going to take you to the Fidelity Viewpoint subscription page. And our team of in-house financial writers are going to be covering the election and market impact all year for you as we get ready for November. So subscribing is really the best way to stay on top of all of our latest insights and analysis as they happen. And the best part, by clicking on that QR code there and signing up for a subscription, you'll be getting our Viewpoints newsletter sent straight to your inbox for free every week. Also, just a reminder about all the places you can catch Market Sense. We really appreciate you watching us on your computers or on the go. You can watch the replay by going to youtube.com/Fidelity on YouTube, or you can search Market Sense on fidelity.com. Or if you want to listen to us, maybe you're walking the dog and you want to make the time to hear what Yurian has to say about the markets, well, search for Market Sense in your Spotify App Store or Apple Podcasts. Finally, for any questions about making a financial plan or staying on track, don't forget, Fidelity can help. We love it when you reach out to us. You can call us, you can go on our website, or you can download Fidelity's app to learn more. On behalf of Yurian, Randall, and Alice today, I'm Heather Hedgenis. What a fantastic conversation. Great job again, guys. We will see you all back here next week. Remember, we are live Tuesdays at 2 Eastern.
Fidelity does not provide legal or tax advice. The information herein is general and educational in nature and should not be considered legal or tax advice. Tax laws and regulations are complex and subject to change, which can materially impact investment results. Fidelity cannot guarantee the information herein is accurate, complete, or timely. Fidelity makes no warranty with regard to such information or results obtained by its use and disclaims any liability arising out of your use of or any tax position taken in reliance on such information. Consult an attorney or tax professional regarding your specific situation. Information presented herein is for discussion and illustrative purposes only and is not a recommendation or an offer or solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Views expressed are as of the date indicated based on the information available at that time and may change based on market or other conditions. Unless otherwise noted, the opinions provided are those of the Fidelity speaker and not necessarily those of Fidelity Investments or its affiliates. Fidelity does not assume any duty to update any of the information. This podcast is intended for U.S. persons only and is not a solicitation for any Fidelity product or service. This podcast is provided for your personal non-commercial use and is the copyrighted work of FMR LLC. You may not reproduce this podcast in whole or in part in any form without the permission of FMR LLC. To the extent any investment information in this material is deemed to be a recommendation, it is not meant to be impartial investment advice or advice in a fiduciary capacity and is not intended to be used as a primary basis for you or your client's investment decisions. Fidelity and its representatives may have a conflict of interest in the products or services mentioned in this material because they have a financial interest in them and receive compensation directly or indirectly in connection with the management, distribution, or servicing of these products or services, including Fidelity funds, certain third-party funds and products, and certain investment services. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Diversification and or asset allocation do not ensure profit or protect against loss. Stock markets are volatile and can fluctuate significantly in response to company, industry, political, regulatory, market, or economic developments. Investing in stocks involves risks, including loss of principal. Foreign markets can be more volatile volatile than U.S. markets due to the increased risks of adverse issuer, political, market, or economic developments, all of which are magnified in emerging markets. These risks are particularly significant for investments that focus on a single country or region. Fixed income investments entail interest rate risk. As interest rates rise, bond prices usually fall. The risk of issuer or counterparty default, issuer credit risk, and inflation risk. Foreign securities are subject to interest rate, currency exchange rate, economic, and political risks, all of which are magnified in emerging markets. It is not possible to invest directly in an index. Fidelity Wealth Services provides non-discretionary financial planning and discretionary investment management through one or more portfolio advisory services accounts for a fee. Advisory services offered by Fidelity Personal and Workplace Advisors, LLC, FPWA, a registered investment advisor. Discretionary portfolio management services provided by Strategic Advisors, LLC, Strategic Advisors, a registered investment advisor. Brokerage services provided by Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, FSB, and custodial and related services provided by National Financial Services, LLC, NFS. Each a member, NYSE and SIPC. FPWA, FBS, and NFS are Fidelity Investments companies. This information is intended to be educational and is not tailored to the investment needs of any specific investor. Personal and workplace investment products are provided by Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC, 900 Salem Street, Smithfield, Rhode Island, 02917.